cliffcentral.com.
We've had a number of really fascinating conversations with the amazing people here at TBWA in Johannesburg in South Africa, and now also worldwide. So we reserved for our final episode and for our final time capsule to really denote the incredible achievements of 40 years of this business. Luca, who is the CEO of TBWA Huntley Scaris in South Africa. It's a big responsibility. And we found this guy wandering around in the corridors downstairs. He looked like he was trying to sort of get his way through the door to come to the party. We're not sure if he's actually meant to be here. Yeah. I mean,
I took a job as an intern this week and thought it'd be good because I hear he can come to the party if he's somehow connected to
he's
the agency.
He's promised us 4 months of free work in return for a couple of years.
Well, you get that every year. You get 12 months. But
Troy Rahanen is the global CEO. You're the big boss of TBWA worldwide. And I'm sure that you two actually have quite a lot of conversation with each other.
I
mean, you must be talking a lot of the time. But today, I want you to talk about the place and the people.
Sure.
And the stories. I mean, we can go through your CVs, which are very impressive. Both of you, many, many awards, being in a position of prominence and having to make the deciding call on so many things. Mm. But it is a place that John and Reg said in the first interview is made by the people.
Mm. Yeah.
You think that's right?
Yeah,
Luca?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, I was drawn to this place because of the people. I knew after 5 minutes of having met John that I had to work here.
You were drawn to this place because you were actually from the Eastern Cape and there's no reason you wanted to stay there.
I was living in Cape Town at the time, but yes, I thought perhaps there's an opportunity to get back there, you know, as Eastern Capers. But yeah, it really is. It's about the people. It's always been about the people. Mm-hmm. John and Reg, right through to Rena, anyone and everyone who's ever worked here has left an incredible mark on this agency. And it's a real privilege to, you know, be a part of that story in some small way.
See, I know that's true because I used to come here occasionally because, you know, Rena would have meetings here and then I'd come and join her. And everybody from, you know, the women who cleaned the bathrooms, everybody knew everybody's name. Mm. And there was a friendly atmosphere. There was a fun element to it.
Yeah.
It was a serious place where stuff got done. But it's also a place where people came because they were passionate about what they did. And, you know, that's a difficult thing to manage from anywhere in the world, but to manage the whole world in that kind of vibe is a very difficult thing to do, isn't it, Troy?
It is, but I feel, you know, I think with our culture at TBWA, I mean, for starters, it was Huntley Scaris first before it was TBWA, right? And so the trick with acquisitions is not to change the company that you so badly wanted to buy. And so that's very much why I love the fact in sort of our naming architecture, you know, it's either, you know, the local agency first or the local agency second, but there's that backslash in between the two of us. And it's the backslash is the gateway to the other agency that connects each other. So either to the global agency or to the local agency. So we never, ever want to take the name off the door. Like when we buy agencies, we don't want to take the name off the door. It's like we see so much strength in that local culture because people are attracted to that. And then it's what else can we bring to that to the table as a global company? So what are the tools and opportunities and clients that we can bring and things like that? So it's always about the 1+1 in this scenario. And we will never buy an agency for a client. We don't do that. And John has been religious about that from the day, you know, I've known him. We always buy it for the people. And we buy it for the management, and then we buy it for the second tier of management. We want to know what the succession plan is. So we always buy the people because the people make the culture and the people make the work. And then it's up to us to be able to help them get to their best potential, you know, reach that potential. So I think we're incredibly fortunate in this culture to have that. So whether it's Chai Day or, you know, Lulara, you go around the world, Tehran, there's so many of them. That's the beautiful thing, and Hunts is like the shining example of it.
But with all these children, do you ever forget who's who?
No, never, because their cultures are so different, and it's about understanding, embracing difference, but unifying it through the lens of disruption. And I think that's like we don't have
that's the word, right? I mean, when
it is,
TBWA, the disruption word, you've managed to brand that properly.
Let's be honest, right? There are a lot of global networks that I don't know what they stand for. And if we're just being blunt, right? And I don't know how you can advise a client if you don't know who you are yourself. And I think, you know, we really do understand ourselves and we're very proud of what we are. And we're united by that across the globe. So then it's a matter of then understanding that there is strength in difference. And then it's how do we work as a, what we call as a collective. So we decided 7 years ago to get rid of the name network. We hate that phrase because it's all about dot to dot and how many offices do you have? And it seems very ego driven and not very connected. And I think we're much more.
It sounds like a technical term.
It does. It sounds, to be honest with you, it sounds like a guy's resume. And yeah, we're not really interested in that. And I think we're much more interested in, like, we always talk about 11,000 creative minds. Like, that's the thing we talk about. Never, and I don't even know how many offices I have. I don't count it. I purposely don't. But I do know Luca. I do know people's names. Right. And I'm much more interested in terms of what are we doing, how are we progressing, and how is the agency culture coming along. And I can tell 3 minutes walking into the door how we're going.
So, Luca, I mean, you've known Reg and John for a while, and before that, probably by reputation.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've got some funny stories about, first of all, how you got involved here and how that first meeting might have gone with John, for example.
Yeah.
But I know you've also got some stories. So tell us, just to be nostalgic for a minute,
yeah,
because it's worth doing this after 40 years of celebrating.
Yeah, look, I mean, I met Reg in the strangest place. I was at a client event in Franschhoek at a client dinner where Reg had no business being. And there was a band playing on stage, and midway through the set, they started to introduce the members of the band. And the lead guitarist was interviewed as advertising legend Reg Lascaris. I was like, what? And I was working for a competitive agency at the time. I was like, why is that really Reg? And I kind of squinted my crappy eyes and I looked. I was like, shit, it really is Reg. So in the break, I ran up to Reg and I said to him, Reg, my name is Luca. You've never met me. It's a genuine privilege to get to meet you. He was like, fantastic. And then I had to reintroduce myself to him.
Humble guy
back in Franschhoek.
But isn't he the most humble guy ever? I mean,
no, amazing.
Here he is.
Absolutely amazing.
He's been a part of the advertising story of this country in ways that, I mean, you cannot replicate. Yeah. And he's just so chilled about it. Oh, it's nice to meet you.
Totally.
Tell me about you. Meanwhile, he's playing the guitar like a rock star as well.
You know, I think we use the word kind of legend and icon quite flippantly. And I think that there are very few genuine icons, specifically in our industry. We tend to glorify people maybe potentially a little bit too often. But I think John and Reg stand alone, really, as genuine icons of the industry in South Africa and genuinely globally. You know, I can't speak, you know, personally, having lived or worked in other agencies around the world, but I know that.
It's almost like Tom and Jerry, Rick and Morty.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. And when I used to work, when I used to work for a competitive agency, my father would always go, Hunt Lascaris, you know.
And must have irritated you a bit.
It irritated me at the time, but I feel very privileged to be here.
No, it's amazing. And for you, Troy, when was the first time you encountered John?
Well, so I just got the job and I get this call from John Hunt, who I obviously knew the name. And being Australian, obviously we admired the fact that there was this great South African agency that was dominating the world creatively. Yeah, so anyone in the Southern Hemisphere, New Zealand, South Africa, Australia, you kind of all want someone to succeed on that front. And so we all knew about them. But I hadn't had the chance, to obviously, through the process to meet him. And then I get this call after I just joined. And John's like, look, it's fabulous. I'm really glad you're here. I'd love to come and see you. I'm like, well, that'll be a privilege, John. Thank you so much. I really welcome the opportunity. He goes, how about I come in about 3-4 weeks? I'm like, superb. That'd be great. Let's meet. So I'm really looking forward to it because I've heard so much about this guy. And so he comes into the office and he says, look, it's really great to meet you, but I want to resign. And I was like, I think my 12-year-old has dated girls longer than we've had actually been together right now. That is the shortest romance I've ever seen.
Did he mean it or was he winding
up? Yeah, he was like, look, I think it's time. I think I'm done. I'm like, how about we go have lunch, John? Let's just go have lunch and have a bit of a chat, and then let's just get to know each other a little bit, and then we'll see how it kind of goes from there. So I've been taking John to lunch now for the last 9 years, just putting it off for as long as what we possibly can, and he is gleefully happy. Look, the place was in a different state then, and you know, we're obviously a far cry from that, And I think John has just been such an incredible partner to me, you know, working with the Creative Collective. He has such respect. You have no idea about the people who are the creative leaders of our company, how much they look up to him. Some true name, they call him Dad. And he has that much respect for his son. They will literally say, "Dad, I need some advice." And wow. So he's an incredible mentor beyond obviously a creative evaluator and someone who can help facilitate getting that work to from good to iconic. He's just an incredible human being. Mm. And so he's able to do that. And then Reg, you know, he's the Greek god. I mean, everyone knows that. He doesn't age. The guy looks magic. Like he's still 45. And
clearly.
But, you know, I feel for Luku because everyone else in this company seems to go bald, but only Reg and Luke. So Luke is going one way or the other. I don't know which way.
It's that Mediterranean thing they've got going.
Yeah, he seems to be. But the rest of them down here, they seem to be losing it, mate. But I'd be worried for you.
Right?
But,
so you hinted at something just now that I think is worth just exploring for a minute because there are accolades and things I want to talk about too that really matters in this industry. It's a very important barometer for where you are. And you guys have got shelves and shelves full of awards. Luca, when it comes to managing the place through the ups and the downs, and now you're in charge here and you're in charge globally, how difficult is that? And how much has advertising changed? Because nothing can really prepare you for all of that.
Mm. Yeah, I think, Troy often speaks about us being in beta, and I don't always being in beta, and I don't want to steal,
a little bit of
his thunder, but I think that's it's a mode of operating that you have to become accustomed to. You have to become
always testing yourself.
Always testing yourself, always understanding that every day is going to bring different challenges and you're going to need to learn and evolve through those.
Right.
And that just because, I was successful yesterday and I can hopefully apply those learnings today, doesn't mean that what got me to the successes of the past will get me to the successes of the future. So, this constant need to live with the kind of discomfort that brings, the constant need to, develop new kinds of muscle memory in terms of how we apply ourselves every single day in our jobs and creating an environment where everybody understands that kind of the muscle memory that's brought them to this place that often brings comfort is something that we need to continue to test. Because it's only when you tear at things and embrace certain tensions that you're able to evolve effectively and create the kind of environment where innovation can really and truly live. And if we're not innovating as an agency through our creative product, through the technologies we're using, then we're redundant. Just because the spreadsheet or the balance sheet may tell a story, I'm not really that interested in that. There's a feeling in the place that is the canary down the gold mine.
You said you can walk in and tell how you're doing almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like a sixth sense, or do you get the feeling from the work that's coming out? Do you get the feeling from the attitude of the people inside? I mean, a lot of what Luke is saying is, I'm not in the business, but it makes perfect sense to me what he's saying. Is that a top-down thing or is it a bottom-up thing?
Bottom-up, without doubt. And I think we're very much a bottom-up culture. We talk about being the world in versus New York out, and I think that's a strength of ours. Mm. So we get energized, solutions that come from four corners of the world, and we find whatever we think is great, and then it's all about share, speed, and scale. So that's what we mean about like always being better. It's like there's always room to improve and always be able to go discover what's next. And so how do we make sure that we keep innovating and staying ahead of the competition, but also really catching up to the consumer, because the consumer is ahead of us more than anyone, right? So it's more about making sure we have that mindset, getting rid of complacency. I mean, we have the disruption label to live up to. You can't be stagnant when you're disruptive. Mm. And so you've always got to be looking for that next thing. And then, I want to make sure that we keep reminding ourselves always, look, we're a creatively driven company.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a creative company is a curious company. Mm. It is always looking for what's next. It's always trying to see what's around the corner. It's always looking for that solution that no one's ever seen before. And so I love disruption. Like, I love the notion of that. I remember I was at a different agency in 2003 and presented it to our board and told them that I thought that this was genius. And then I joined 11 years later. But I just really believe in that mentality. And so we really do you'd be amazed at how many things come from offices of under 70 people that are now deployed globally. Mm. So it really does prove, and I love that coming in, and we believe in that coming from, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, those kinds of places where you can change the whole company from that corner of the world. And I think that's fantastic.
Well, both of you can answer this one, because I think John and Reg's initial vision was to create a world-class agency from South Africa. And I don't think it's, you know, it's any misrepresentation of what's happened. South Africa seems to be a place where, because there are unbelievable challenges and it's completely different and it's diverse as hell, we come up with quite a lot of interesting ideas. And I'm sure that there are ways, Troy, that you've seen that South Africa's kind of led the way for the rest of the business.
Oh, yeah. It's this is a holding company without the bureaucracy of a holding company.
That's how do you manage that? Because it's easier said than done.
No, how does he manage that, right? So well, I mean, he does that incredibly well, because it's a matter of not looking at it as like it's a spreadsheet. Right? And that's what people ultimately fall into, that it keeps a level of siloism happening versus really getting it to collaborate and be able to come together. So you could probably work out how many times you see Magna Carta, Yellowwood, and Grid all next to what these guys are doing, right? And then we've got all of our relationships. And they really come together often. And so it's a matter of understanding that there's strength in numbers and being able to do that. And then it's about, obviously, surprise and delight, like then when what the output is.
Yeah.
So like when Pete Curry did, you know, Joburg Ballet, it's like one of my favorite things. I don't know if you remember that work, but it was absolutely superb, right? And that was a demonstration of us being able to really embrace disruption live. And he showed the way that it didn't have to just be like a retweet back at somebody. Yeah. It was actually a way
massive income stream. It wasn't going to be with a Joburg Ballet, right?
No, but it was a way of us understanding, like, this is a behavioral change as a company that we need to look at.
Right.
He took that, did it superbly, did it with craft. It was an absolute showcase for our company. So, I mean, that's what I mean. There's just yet another example of how this company has credibly shown the way for our network, our collective.
You agree with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I
have
do.
You ever felt I like, do. Have you ever felt like New York has imposed itself on you?
No, never.
Well, you're going to say so now.
No,
actually, I would, because Troy does create the kind of environment where, you know, I can speak frankly about things. Yeah. But no, I mean, you know, I feel very lucky to work in an environment where I feel like I'm accountable to deliver on what is my mandate.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm given the space to do it in the way that I believe is right. And I get to do it with all of the support that I believe I need, that is always there when I need it, whether it be Troy is, if I send, and I often tell people, you know, the accessibility I have to Troy is remarkable. If I'm ever in trouble, and even if it's not trouble with a capital T, right, small T, I can always just send him a WhatsApp, and I know within 10 minutes he'll be on the phone to me, or there'll be a WhatsApp back, and that's remarkable. And I don't have to use it often, because I know that we think in similar ways. And I know that I have his full backing, which is
that's
fantastic.
Very cool.
You know, you mentioned the question about, or you mentioned the statement about South Africa as a country and as an environment. And, you know, I think that our industry is quite reflective of that environment in terms of, you know, innovation does grow in South Africa. We are exporters of innovative, resilient people.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are an environment that is fraught with tension.
Yeah.
Right, some good, some bad, but we use that tension hopefully positively, and within our agency world, to create the holding company without the bureaucracy is you've got to embrace the tensions that exist, right? And diversity inevitably tensions will emerge. The challenge is, how do you harness those tensions to create more interesting solutions, and how do you eliminate the toxic tensions? So being very deliberate about what are the toxic tensions, how are we eliminating those things? What are the positive tensions? How are we doubling down on those things?
Well, I mean, ironically, the tensions are a great source of disruption.
100%.
Which is what you're looking for,
100%.
Right? So if that's your goal, this is a 100%. Great canvas to play on.
If I came into this role and sought to engineer all the tension out of our business, there's no question it would be an easier business to work on the inside of. But it'd be a hell of a boring
land,
and the work wouldn't be what the work should be.
Yeah. So that's why it's also worthwhile having people back in the office, because the platform of, you know, Teams or whatever you want, Zoom, it didn't have as much tension in it, didn't have as much depth to the conversation, didn't have as much stretch. And so, my old boss used to say, look, it's okay to, you got to learn how to manage friction, because that's how you get fire. And I thought that's a really good way of, you know, understanding our job as leaders ultimately. And John's had to do that for all of his career in Reg. you know, to be able to really understand all the skills that are at the table, understand different points of view, but then get them to that place where they need to get to. And so I think and that's why we love the job, to be honest with you, because it's not the same job every day.
But it is also very difficult to manage creative people. They always say it's like herding cats. And do you think that it would be would be easier to do what you do if it was just the, say, the financial people or those hugely organized and systematized people? Because the creatives almost, you know, they do have to run wild a little bit.
It would be easier for someone else to do. I wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't want
because
it.
I wouldn't be interested in being here. You know, quite frankly, you know, Troy and I, we're both in this game because we're inspired by the work.
Yeah.
We're both in this game because we're inspired about being a meaningful part of producing amazing work, because that's our product at the end of the day. And yes, you know, creative people are different, but that's the beauty of it. I mean, you know, we've got to embrace all types in our business.
Yeah.
Particularly the misfits, actually.
And they want to be with you.
I hope so.
Definitely. I think, my first boss, even though I wanted to be on sort of client service, and those days we didn't have planning, but he made us do a portfolio in our first year, even though we didn't want to be a creative. Mm. And his whole motivation was so that we would understand how difficult it was and what our responsibility was in helping someone look at a blank piece of paper and make it into something. So it was a really great bit of guidance there to be able to sort of understand, like, we all have a role and getting the work to there. I think it's when creators get frustrated when people don't care as much on the other side. And so when they see a level of apathy or just like order taker or whatever else, that's when they get frustrated, because they don't feel a partner that's with them. They're trying to help solve the problem. Mm. I've never had a difficult conversation with a creative when you're really trying to be constructive. You know, so I just don't think that that's an issue. I have petulant planners. I have account barons. You have them all, right? It's all different types, but the job is, get everyone around the table. Let's really understand what the opportunity of the problem is. Let's go work at it. You know, and that's why you need people that really do want to be together.
How much of advertising has changed because now there's a lot of data involved. There's a lot of technology involved. You know, if I look at some of the stuff that this agency is most famous for from yesterday, right the way back to when John and Reg started in 83, there is a genuine output of just amazing work. Mm. But it has become harder, I'm sure, because now, Luca, you've got so many more inputs. Mm. You know, you've got social media and you've got people who are constantly commenting and appraising work that isn't for them even.
Yeah.
And they're these people who are tempted to make knee-jerk reactions because something is getting, you know, some kind of trending going on Twitter or something, and you suddenly get nervous about stuff that before you wouldn't listen to some guy shouting at you on the street. And that's effectively what Twitter is.
Yeah.
How much do you have to incorporate that thinking into sometimes being braver than you might have been when you didn't have to listen to people?
Yeah. You know, I think, I mean, it has changed. And I think that the creative process is always enriched by stimulus. All right. I'm always interested by interesting, diverse stimulus being in the space, right? And I think that what social media has done and the amplification of voices and certainly the proliferation of data has provided more interesting stimulus that are the building blocks for any creative idea. I think that the challenge is always we've had to become more effective at filtering out the noise. Because there's a lot of noise, and that comes up. That's noise we create in our own heads. That's noise that engage that
and sometimes
that
the clients
in our client relationships. 100%. So you know, I think that the creative process is and the role of strategy has always been about taking a lot of noise, a lot of complexity, and making it unbelievably simple.
Yeah.
And I think that is a truth that still exists today. I think that sometimes we forget that as an industry. I think if we could reorientate ourselves around that thing. I think as an industry, particularly in South Africa, would be all the richer for it.
Yeah, no, I think well said. I think, you know, we talk on, you know, one of the things we say on Apple is that strategy is about sacrifice. Mm. And so it's okay to get a number of inputs, but in the end, we have to get down to clarity. Mm. And I think, I think that there's been lots of great inspirations from data points that have come in. Mm. So I think the only challenge is not to try to put them, you know, into a handful and then throw it at the consumer, hoping that they catch all those messages. So it's a matter about being clear with, you know, with what you're going to do with that empirical bit of advice. I think that the challenge with data, I think, is a little bit about this fascination of buying media ahead when you haven't really interrogated the brief and looked at the customer journey and about how you could really disrupt that. I think sometimes there's a bit of a presumption, and it's done from an efficacy standpoint, where you look at the sort of year ahead of media, you book this, you do that, but you don't really know what the business challenge is at that time. You don't know the competitive context at that time. You don't really know the business problem you're solving at that time. So how could you already make the decision on how you're going to then show that to the world?
And it's harder than ever to reach people because there's so much noise.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely cluttered. I mean, I think a lot of clients need to really take a hard look at how much messaging they have themselves out there. I mean, one of the things that I say, you know, a lot of clients ask me, they're like, well, what's one of the advices that you would give me? And I'd say, I would reduce your marketing staff. Really? I think you got too many marketing people. Because too many marketing people create too many, they believe, and I understand why. There's a lot to do in marketing. I actually have a lot of empathy for clients because I think they've got a lot to cover in terms of the experience now. However, there are too many people who then have a thing that they need to then go prove. They've got to go message something. So then they go and employ somebody, or go employ somebody different, whatever else. And then you just get this fragmentation of the strategy. There are too many messages out there. So then you get to dilution ultimately. And so, you know, I think in the end, I do think it's a matter of like really getting clear, looking at how much you're out there. Because if you're creating your own clutter first, then you go up against your competitor, then you go up against culture, you're screwed.
Yeah.
So you've really got to be very clear about a few things that you want to be as a business, and then do that superbly well to break through against your category. Then hopefully the world notices you, you know?
Yeah. Anything you want to add to that?
No, I think Troy's 100% right. And I think that, you know, there's a proliferation of a lot of average out there, I think, in terms of the work. I don't see... I'm quite hard on us as an agency and quite hard on us as an industry. And I think that the work isn't good enough. And I think it's because we've become very distracted by what Troy is talking about now. I think if we got back to focusing on the power of an amazing creative idea and how that idea manifests through the whole customer and consumer experience, I think we'd start to see better ideas manifest and more impact happening in terms of our clients, brands, and businesses.
So you guys have, you know, as part of this business, received just about every accolade in the book. I mean, I was talking to John about his Hall of Fame thing the other day.
Great.
I mean, that's just a crowning achievement on just years and years of doing incredible stuff. And I know how important that is, not just because the clients like it and not just because the rest of the advertising industry looks to it and goes, okay, that's the best. But what does it actually mean to you guys as the head of the business here in South Africa and globally? Are you looking at that in some spreadsheet way and counting up the awards, or is there something else going on? Is there another way to evaluate this?
Well, I don't like the way in which Cannes has gone at all. And I do feel like it's through companies that are obsessed with getting shortlists and getting bronzes and whatever else. I only really care about Grand Prix and golds. I don't really care about the rest and where we finish on a table. No one remembers where Wyden finishes in a year, right? No, we don't care if we finish third or 10th. We don't really care. We know what's good work. We've done thousands of pieces of good work. So I'm much more interested about what do we think? Like, do we really think that that is the best work that we're doing right now? So, and I'm only really interested in really breaking through and then that it really delivers massive impact. So for me, you know, when it adds up to being something like, okay, we're the most innovative company in the world, like I like those accolades. That feels great. That feels like we continue to progress. And if you get a Network of the Year award, that's great because it means that everyone's winning and everything else. But I know we just had a Worldwide Creative Director meeting and I sit through that for 3 days. We go through all the ads. I go through it every time because that's our product. And we sit there and we know in that room where we are. We don't need any other judge to tell us. It's great to get confirmation.
That's powerful.
But we know, and we know where we're going to improve and what we need to do. The bigger thing is, the thing I love is after Cannes, and John does this with me and Pete doesn't, we go to Paris on Monday and Tuesday after Cannes, and then we look at every single piece of work that we did versus the work that won. And then we say, what's the difference? And then it's about taking those learnings and then going back and reapplying that inside of our next chapter of work. And they're my two favorite days of the year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awards?
Look, I mean, by nature, we were talking about this last night, I'm pathologically competitive. So let's just start there.
That's why you're in charge.
That's why I kind of like Lucas.
But look, it is important. And for all the reasons Troy mentioned, I think, you know, awards for us are an objective measure on how we're doing. I want us to be winning all of the time, quite frankly, whether it be on creative award stages, whether it be on creative effectiveness award stages, whether it be on digital award stages, whether it be on the ad focus agency of the year stage. I think awards bring a certain, they demand excellence of you consistently. Mm. It sets a standard and a legacy that is to be maintained. And I think that puts a positive sort of level of pressure into a business. And it says, you know, what is the standard we expect of ourselves? And that standard is incredibly high, and it creates a sense of responsibility, right, at the end of the day. We're living in a time where creativity is more important than it's ever been. And I want to make sure that we have the best bench of creative thinkers in the country, in our agency collective, whether that be in the creative department, in the strategy department, in the account management department, at reception. I don't really care. I want everyone to be stimulated by
that. It sort of reminds me of that line, I think it was from The Rock, where Sean Connery, one of the characters, says, "I'll do my best." And Connery goes, "Your best." Yeah. Losers always whine about their best. Winners go home and fuck the prom queen. And I mean, it's probably not PC for 2023, but that's still the attitude.
Sean Connery,
right?
Though.
Yeah, very Sean Connery.
He lives up to his.
So looking ahead, because you guys have got the steering wheel in front of you, you're at the controls. What do you think is going to happen in advertising? How are you positioning yourselves to be disruptive in the future? And what kinds of ambitions do you have for the business? We'll start with you, Luca.
I mean, I think, you know, as advertisers and marketers, we've always known that every opportunity, every moment a consumer engages with a brand is an opportunity to have an impact, right? And that a brand is a sum total of somebody's experiences that they've had throughout their entire lives. I think our ability to impact that meaningfully with real intelligence is more potent today than it's ever been. And the opportunity for us is to be the best at doing that, quite frankly, to make sure that we understand the consumer better than we've ever understood the consumer. And I think, to be frank, I think there was a period sort of between 10 and 20 years ago when I first got into the industry where we lost sight of that, right? I think we used to have very strong, insightful people in our business. And I think that the rise of sort of the internet and the common window on the world, I suppose, blunted strong positive insight. And I think now that we've able to identify sort of insight at quite a granular level gives us a real opportunity to inject true insight. When I say true insight, I mean with a capital I, back into the thinking and the work. And it's our responsibility to be those custodians of each and every one of those touch points for our clients.
I think my forecast ahead would be that more work is going to look alike. I think there's going to be a lot of conventions that are going to be built based around platforms, based around, I think, some clients using data that tell them and testing that sort of gets them to a very familiar place. So I think that, unfortunately, more is going to look like that, which I think is a great opportunity for a company like us because we want to go up against that. So I think, unfortunately, creatively, there's going to be a lot of worse advertising, and then there'll be those that then stand out. Secondarily, I think there'll be a bunch of bad agencies that are going to go out of business, just like bad banks, just like bad airlines that will go out of business. There'll be more merged agencies in the not too distant future, no doubt, and some of those holding companies and whatnot, those that don't believe in the brands as much. And there'll be more entrants that will come in that will be different. Yeah, we've seen a lot of independence rise, in the last few years. around the world. So I think, you know, there'll be those that still, you know, want to stand out and specialize in certain areas. So I think there's just going to be that dynamic. And so that's why the imperative is to keep evolving, you know, that look at every day as the next chapter and, you know, look and know that, you know, we constantly talk about, look, we're never going to retire satisfied. You know, we're never going to really reach our full potential. It's just because the business changes all the time. So you just have to get used to that. And the fact is you got to just keep moving and changing. So for us, it's not about being the masters of what we have done. It's about, you know, starting to be the students and the people who can apply about what's coming next. And that's exciting for, you know, curious creative mind. You want to be, I want to learn more things. Yeah. So I think that's a pretty exciting place for a great company that believes in itself.
Love it. I mean, this idea of always being in beta, always being fighting fit, and you're going to win some, you're going to lose some.
Oh yeah.
But you got to take the chances, right?
Yeah.
And come up with stuff that's completely wacky. Sometimes it gets you into big trouble.
Yeah.
And sometimes do all the things that are unconventional, no matter how unpopular they seem at the beginning.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I remember, I remember when I was in Australia, we were fired from a client that was our number one client. They were at an all-time high in sales, in equities, everything. And we got fired. And they basically had fired all their suppliers. Anyone that was a supplier to them, they fired everyone. They called it a refresh project. And so I don't ever live in fear of being fired anymore, because even when we're great, we can be fired. So all I'm more worried about is, can we live up to being great? And I just want to go do great work, because after that, I can't control anything else. I know that. I can control what we do. And so I think that's the thing I'm most worried about is, if we look around the room and we just see good, that's not going to be very satisfying to me. We have to get to that next level. And that's what John and Reg have shown here. They thought beyond South Africa. They thought well beyond these borders, that they wanted to get to a world-class level, and they did it. And I think that's the crowning achievement for me, which is never confine yourself to a small opportunity. You know what I mean? Really look beyond that. And I think, you know, John and Reg have shown a way to a host of people that have come through here that have gone on to careers in many great places and done some amazing things. And I think they're just a great example of how you can think much bigger than the place that you're born in.
Can't think of a better way to end it than that. Thank you both so much. Power to you both. I hope it's going to be another 40 years of incredible
things. Me too,
man.
Yeah, I won't be here. I promise you.
I don't know if any of us will.
No chance.
Luca probably will. He's aging better than the rest of us.
He's Italian. You know, they always look good.
But I think this is just a tremendous place to be. And happy 40th.
Thank you, man.
Gareth. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. CliffCentral.com.